We have a man here, Solomon, who has a vantage point that none of us will ever have. I mean, he was the richest man in the world at the time which he lived. He's talking about the danger in the struggle for success, thinking that somehow acquiring, achieving that success is going to make us happy. That's something that people are lured into. That's part of our culture. Climbing that ladder, getting higher, one run higher. And the world is full of counsel. The world system is such that it tells you if you can just climb higher, if you can just be more successful, you'll be happy. But is that reality? Or is that a lie?
The Bible says that the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. Welcome to Pulpit Power, featuring Pastor Tony Skeving, senior pastor of Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. Today's message was previously preached before a church audience. And now, here's Pastor Skeving.
Well, let's take our Bibles, please, at this time, and turn back to the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes and the fourth chapter, Ecclesiastes chapter 4. This book of the Bible is very unusual. It's very unique. It's really unlike any other of the 66 books of the Bible. And we have somebody here writing. Of course, we know he's King Solomon, and he's really in kind of a poor frame of mind. And the reason for this is he's conducting an experiment, if you will. He's trying everything under the sun, everything this world has to offer, trying to find happiness. And of course, he's striking out. He's shooting blanks. And so he's writing here in what I believe is his journal on what a futile, empty, dead end it really is. And we can learn a lot from this because this is our culture in the 21st century. More than ever, there are folks that are clawing and scratching and trying to find fulfillment in money, in possessions, in power, and they're striking out as well. Now we get to chapter 4 and we pick it up in verse number 1, and I'm going to skip some of this to save time, but we're going to look at the first 8 verses, but just read a few of these verses. Verse 1 says, "So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter, and on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they, which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun." And then verse 6. "Better is an handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And then I returned and saw vanity under the sun." He keeps using that word vanity. It means vain, it means empty, it means unfulfilling. And he's using that word, he's using these expressions to try and show to us that really the quest for success is not all that it's cracked up to be. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. The quest for success. Let's pray before we begin. Now, Father, we come before Thee. We ask You to please help us to listen. We pray that You'd help us to get the truth down that could really save us a lot of heartache throughout our lives. Father, there are folks here at different stages of life, and some who are going to get something out of this message more than others, but whatever the soul, the heart, the person, the life, there's something here, and we just pray that You'd help us to get it. I pray now these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Out on the West Coast, there's a cemetery called Forest Lawn Memorial Park. It's where the rich and the famous are buried. Over 25 years ago, my wife went with me to on our honeymoon to the West Coast, and we made a return trip here a few years back, and we went to this particular cemetery because I wanted to see the grave of Jimmy Stewart, who is my all-time favorite actor. There's just never been anyone like old James Stewart. And I think my all-time favorite movie is one he starred in called It's a Wonderful Life. How many have seen that movie? We watch it nearly every Christmas, if not every other. But I love the acting in it. I love the plot. I love the happy ending. And there's one scene in particular that I really like where old George Bailey, Jimmy Stewart, tells off Mr. Potter. You remember Mr. Potter? And what had happened is George's dad had died, Peter Bailey, and he felt Mr. Potter had put him in an early grave there, and Potter spouting off saying, George, Peter Bailey was no businessman. Yeah, I know that. And going on and on. And he says something about his character, and George rips him to him. And he comes out with this long tirade of stuff, just put Mr. Potter in his place. And then he says, what are you but a warped, twisted old man? And years later, George Bailey has hit hard times, and now he's on the little desk looking up to Potter, and Potter says, what are you but a warped, twisted young man? You know, I think of those who have tried to climb that ladder and clawed and scratched along the way, only to get to a place like Mr. Potter and found themselves frustrated, warped, twisted. Solomon's talking about that in this passage here. A very classic one. He's talking about the danger in the struggle for success, thinking that somehow acquiring, achieving that success is going to make us happy. That's something that people are lured into. That's part of our culture. Climbing that ladder, getting higher, one run higher. And the world is full of counsel. The world system is such that it tells you if you can just climb higher, if you can just be more successful, you'll be happy. But is that reality? Or is that a lie? These verses before us in this passage today are not about the little man. The fellow who goes and does an honest day's work and he ekes out an honest living and he's satisfied with that. No, that's not who these verses are about. Who Solomon has in the crosshairs here is Mr. Big, the fellow who is acquiring to get more, the shaker, the mover, the entrepreneur, the businessman, the workaholic. That individual who wants to be part of the top dogs, the upper crust, and will do whatever it takes to get higher. Or those who hope to. And maybe you're one of those who has aspirations and goals and dreams to somehow reach the top and to make money and to get possessions and to be successful and to find, quote, happiness there. Listen very carefully. We have a man here, Solomon, who has a vantage point that none of us will ever have. I mean, he was the richest man in the world at the time which he lived. He had all the, quote, wine, women, and song that man could desire. And he has this vantage point that nobody has really today. He reached the top. And if it's a pyramid, there he is alone at the very top. And he's giving us now some insight of what it's like to get there. And it's the truth. And so he's saying in so many words, don't kid yourself, don't lie to yourself. You can try for it, but this is what you're going to find. And here we have Solomon, who is in his own realm now, finding this out for us, and not reading it out of a book, but experiencing it firsthand, and giving us the gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching emotions that go with the futility of reaching the top and not having it satisfy. The quest for success. As we look at it, we see, first of all, the spurious reasoning of indulgence. By that I mean the false logic that comes with trying to get more, trying to indulge and thinking that's what will fulfill us. He's talking here about selfishness. He's talking here about greed. He's talking here about oppression. Look in verse 1. He says, so I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors, there was power. But they, the oppressed, had no comforter. Now, what's it mean to oppress somebody? Well, remember when Pharaoh put the Jewish people to slavery? They were oppressed. That's oppression. In the Bible, you find many oppressing God's people. The Philistines did it a lot. The Moabites, the Midianites. The Romans obviously did it. Nebuchadnezzar did it. These were leaders. These were nations that oppressed the people of God. But then in the Bible, there's also a lot of individual oppression. And so an oppressor, like Solomon mentions in verse 1, is somebody who gets you under his thumb and somebody who gets the upper hand and somebody who takes advantage of you. Have you ever been oppressed? Ever had somebody take advantage of you or get the upper hand in your life? You know, Gilbert, I mentioned it before, is a comic strip that is all about oppression. And it's the guys up here oppressing the little peons down here, and it's so exaggerated, it's so funny. But there's all kinds of theories about those who are up really high, even worldwide, the shakers and the movers, the urban legends of the Skull and Crossbone Society and the Trilateral Commission and the Gnostics and the rich and the famous and those who are really calling the shots and those who are really pulling the strings. We really don't know anything about that. I mean, we have our theories and such, but there are those throughout this world who have power. They have money, and they do call the shots to a great extent. There are those nationally who have that kind of power and money. There are those statewide. There are those regionally who have that kind of money and power to do that, you know, to get the upper hand, if you will. And what they'll do quite often is they'll step on people as they're climbing that ladder. The others are just a rung on it, and if they step on somebody's fingers on the way up, no big deal. Those are the oppressors, and Solomon is talking about them. They're in society, and they're not fair. It's not fair. Maybe you've been oppressed. Maybe you have oppressed. I hope not. But in Job 35:9, Job says, by reason of the multitude of oppressions, they make the oppressed to cry, and they cry out by reason of the arm of the mighty. This goes on all the time, sadly. And in verse 1 of our text, notice Solomon, he mentions tears. He says, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed. Solomon says, I look around, it breaks my heart. But there are these people, they're suffering, they're hurting. If you've ever been on the receiving end of this, it's no fun. Notice he mentions also in verse 1, and they had no comforters. They had no comforter. The psalmist mentions that. In Psalm 69:20, he says, reproach hath broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. And I looked for some to pity, but there was none, and for comforters, but I found none. So here's the oppressed. Nobody really cares. Comforters are zilch. And so what is Solomon's reaction to this? Well, notice in verse 2, he says, wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. Wow. Praise the dead who are already dead more than the living, which were alive. And you say, why would that be? Well, because the dead aren't oppressed anymore. The dead don't suffer anymore. The dead don't have to go through it. In verse 3, he adds, yea, better is he than both they, which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. Now again, Solomon is speaking kind of crazy here, if you will. He's gotten into the realm of the lost world, okay? We would look at this as Christian people and say, wow, this is really gloomy talk. But he's in the world of the lost people, and he's looking through unsaved glasses, and he's telling us this is how the world really is. And it is. And so Solomon's gotten out of God's world, if you will, and he's gotten over into the world of the unsaved, the heathen, and he's engaged in that to the fullest. And he's coming up now with these thoughts, and he's trying to see what men should do, what really mankind should do, speaking of the unsaved even. And so he says, look, it's such a dead end, and there's so much injustice going on, and he said you would be better off if you had never been born. Now, Solomon at this point of his life must have been, I don't know, 50 or so. I think he's about at the midpoint of his ministry. I don't know that to be exactly sure. I do know this, that when Solomon started out, he was not an oppressive person. Actually, he must have been a very tender person to ask what he asked when God said you can have anything you want. And we find out that after he asked it in 1 Kings 4:29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much. Notice this part, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. It's not talking about his wisdom, but something beyond that. This largeness of heart thing, what is it? Well, what do we think of somebody when we say, boy, he's got a big heart. Got a heart as big as this room. You know, we use these expressions. Well, we mean he's compassionate. He's generous. He's kind. And so Solomon evidently was very big-hearted when he took over as king. But we know this, he became an oppressor. He actually himself became like the very person he's talking about here in Ecclesiastes later on, because when he died, remember how they came to his son Rehoboam, the new king? And they said, look, your dad was hard on us. And Rehoboam said, "What?" He never said, what are you talking about? He wasn't. No, he didn't deny it at all. Evidently, Solomon was hard on the people. Evidently, later on in life, as he became this workaholic and he was feeding this big ego and he was building all this stuff. He was taxing the people heavily. He was oppressing the people. And so he had become something that he was criticizing here. He became very oppressive. He started out with a big heart. It's a warning to all of us to be careful because it could happen to us as well. So in verses 2 and 3, after looking at all this oppression going on, Solomon says, you know, you'd be better never born than born in a world like this. Job said something about that. In Job 3, as he was suffering, he said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there was a man-child conceived. He added in verse 11, why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Now, this is strange, isn't it? These are strange scriptures. As we look at this kind of talk, we say, this shouldn't be unless you've experienced this. Unless you've had a financial reversal in your life, or unless you've had a broken home, or unless you've had a wayward child, or unless you have had a business failure, unless you've had broken health, there are times when you can actually get the feeling like, I wish I'd have never hit born. You hit rock bottom. Now, you'd never kill yourself. That's a good thing. You wouldn't take your life. But you say, I wish I'd never been born. To the Jewish people, suicide was extremely shameful. It was something that's very rare in the Bible, in fact. And we can point out a Samson, and we can say he committed suicide, but look at the conditions he did it under. He lost his eyes. He was spiteful. He wanted revenge against the Philistines. He wanted to kill them more than himself. We could look at Saul. We could say, well, King Saul committed suicide. Yeah, that's true. But he was wounded, and the Philistines were coming up to kill him anyway. I'm telling you, suicide was a rare thing with the Jewish people. There's a fellow by the name of Ahithophel, but there's not many in the Bible that just actually took their life because they were bummed out or they hit rock bottom. And yet we see suicide very prevalent in our American society, and so much so that they don't put it in the paper that much anymore. They don't tell you if somebody took their own life. You know, I mentioned my honeymoon a moment ago. My wife and I on our honeymoon were in Northern California. We crossed the Golden Gate Bridge. I'd crossed it as an 18-year-old. I crossed it as a 25-year-old. And for over 25 years, I hadn't crossed it again until recently. I got a chance to cross the Golden Gate Bridge. But it's about 1.7 miles. And I started to read up on it because it's the 75th anniversary of it, and found out that over the years, over 1,400 people have jumped and committed suicide off the Golden Gate Bridge. Those were those that did not survive the fall. And so we see this epidemic, and it goes on. But the Jewish people would say more so, I wish I'd never been born. And that's why Solomon is saying that here. By the way, you don't have to get to that extent. I mean, a Christian who's in God's will, a Christian who's walking with God, who's living a vibrant life, who's serving the Lord, doesn't have to get in that frame of mind. But Solomon's not doing any of that here. And so he's kind of thinking along those lines. He's got a different attitude than the Apostle Paul. Remember Paul? Paul said, I'm in a strait betwixt two. I'd like to die and go to heaven, but to remain here is more needful for you. And look, I can't wait to go to heaven, but I'm not in that big a hurry, okay? I want to serve the Lord here. I want to have an opportunity to bring God glory. And so I'm enjoying life. I think a Christian ought to enjoy life. But Solomon is saying it'd be better off if I'd never been born. He sees the oppression going on. And maybe you've experienced oppression. Now, how do you handle oppression? Well, first of all, you look to the one who was more oppressed than anyone else, Jesus Christ. Isaiah 53:7, written 700 years before his birth, prophetically said this of him, he was oppressed and he was afflicted. Yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. So he faced that oppression, and yet he showed us it can be done by God's grace. Here's something else to remember as well. Remember this, that God is keeping record, okay? And in James 5:4, it says, behold, the hire of the laborers, which have reaped down your fields, which have you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. So God is keeping track, and he hears the cries of those who are oppressed. So Solomon addresses that sort of thing in the first three verses. We see here, first of all, the spurious reason of indulgence. But secondly, we see the sad result of intemperance. Now, intemperance is simply being out of balance, not doing things in moderation, okay? And in verse number 4, Solomon says there's a sad result to it. He said, "Again, I considered all travail and every right work, that for this man, a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit." Now, what is he saying in verse number 4? Let's read it again. "Again, I considered all travail," that is all sorrow, "and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor." What he's talking about here is those who do make it up higher, but those who are jealous of them. So now he's speaking of envy. With that in mind, look at it again. Solomon says, "I considered all travail," that is, those who are laboring to get ahead, and every, notice, right work. They're not cheating people to do it. They're being honest. "And that for a man is envied of his neighbor." In other words, for getting higher. So it's kind of like a no-win deal. I mean, you got the middle class sneering at the upper class because they've gotten higher than them, and quite often it's just jealousy. Now, he mentions here in verse 4, they did it honestly. He uses the word right, for every right work. They weren't corrupt, they weren't oppressing people, they weren't stepping on folks. They were honestly earning it, they were working hard to earn it. And if you're one of those, God bless you. But there will always be those who look at you and say, "Well, he did it by doing this." You know, there's always envy, there's always jealousy. You ever seen a pink Cadillac and the bumper sticker that says, "Ask me how I got it"? You know, I just want to say, "Ask me how I got it. I worked my tail off." And those who work really should not have to be sneered at by those who don't, who are jealous because those who have worked have gotten higher. That's exactly what he's talking about in verse number 4. Jealousy. And jealousy can bite anybody. Any of us can be bitten by the green monster of jealousy. There was a great preacher years ago who was reading the paper, and they were bragging on this upcoming young preacher who was filling up sanctuaries all across England. And the older preacher had been the household name up until that point. And it really hit him in the heart. And he had to beg God to help him overcome his jealousy. I mean, you can be a spiritual person and still be plagued with jealousy. Cain was not spiritual, and it was envy that caused him to commit murder. Saul was not spiritual, King Saul, and that's why he envied David. I think of the brothers of Joseph. I think of the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin who hated Jesus Christ. You say, well, why? Envy, envy. Bible says in Proverbs 27:4, "Wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy?" It's like wrath is one thing and anger is another, but envy, whoa, envy. Who can stand before envy? And it's mentioning in verse 4, the fellow who can't win. It says again, Solomon says, "Again, I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor, and this is also vanity and vexation of spirit." Here's the fellow. By the way, the jealous guy is jealous because he can't keep up. It's called the old keeping up with the Jones syndrome. But it's also speaking here of that competition on the ladder. All right, that dog-eat-dog, that bite-eat-bite, that competition on the ladder, trying to get higher. Now, there's nothing wrong with being industrious. In fact, I got to stop right here before I go on and say, industry is better than idleness. The Bible says, if a man won't work, neither shall he eat. The Bible is not pro-welfare. If you haven't caught that yet, God is very high on hard work and prosperity through hard work. And so industry is better than idleness. And I'm not slamming the capitalistic system, okay? I mean, it's actually a biblical one. Competition is what strengthens a nation. And that's God's way. But an individual who is clawing and scratching, trying to get higher just because he thinks that's going to make him happy, and just because he's competing with the next guy and trying to keep up with the Joneses, and part of this maddening craze to outdo the next guy, he's going to be sorely let down. Can't handle second chair. Got to have that preeminence. And there are those who are like a caged lion or a leopard. They're just going back and they just got to get higher and they just got to get more. And so they put in long days and they put in late nights and they put in long hours and they do everything they can to get higher. only to find out it doesn't satisfy. And that's what Solomon's talking about in verse 4. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, what's odd is there's the other extreme in the next verse. Look at verse 5. Solomon says, the fool, and you could almost add, however. The fool, however, foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. You say, what in the world is that talking about now? Well, when the Bible uses this expression, folding of the hands, you've heard it before in the Proverbs there. It's talking about idleness. It's talking about the sluggard and slothfulness. We read in Proverbs 6:10, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. And you know the rest of it. You've read the Proverbs enough. So shall poverty come upon that fella. And so it's talking here about the industrious, hardworking guy who's clawing and scratching, the person who stands back and criticizes them. The extreme of that, the opposite, the guy who folds his hands and eats his own flesh. And you say, what in the world is that talking about? Notice that in verse number 5 again. He eats his own flesh. Well, that's talking about being so lazy, he's starving, and so, you know, he'll go to gnawing on his arm, and it's talking about self-destruction, basically. Getting so lazy that you won't eat, or you won't earn anything to eat, and so having nothing left but your arm, and so he foldeth his hands, and there's no resort but to eat his own flesh. So it's talking about the extreme of the workaholic. It's talking about the sluggard over here. Bottom line is we need balance. We need balance. Now look at verse number 6. Here's the balance. Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Let's read that again. Better is a handful with quietness, that is tranquility in life, placidness, than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Think about this. It's good. It ought to really be written on the visor of every car. And you ought to read it every morning on your way to work. Better is a handful with quietness than both hands full with vexation of spirit. You ought to write it on the bathroom mirror as you're getting ready in the morning before you head out there. Remember that. I would be better off with a handful and a quiet, peaceful life than both hands full with vexation of spirit. Proverbs 15:16 says, better is little with the fear of the Lord. It even gets better. Then great treasure and trouble therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs, where love is, than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. It's describing some kitchen tables. There's the filet mignon, there's the 10-course meal, but there is a family that's not happy, that is at odds, that is at each other's throat, versus this little with the fear of the Lord. The dinner of herbs. God says that's better. In Proverbs 16:8, it says, better is little with righteousness than great revenues without right. You know, something is going to eventually crack in the life of a fellow who's just trying to claw and work and scratch to get ahead and to get higher. Something's going to, like the rivets on the Titanic, it's going to eventually break, and they're going to reach a point of disillusionment. They're going to reach a place where they say, what am I doing? They're going to burn out. They're going to hit some kind of a midlife crisis. They're going to have these thoughts. They're going to look in this mirror. They're going to get sick of the intensity. They're going to step back and evaluate their life. They're going to say, what am I doing? Where am I heading? Why this insanity? Is this worth it? They'll have thoughts they won't even admit as they hit that point. And that stamina begins to wane in life. And they say, why am I doing this? This work no longer satisfies me. That's what Solomon's talking about here. A home that's chaotic, and Solomon had one of those. His father had one of those before him. He's saying it's not worth it. Notice again in verse 6, better is a handful with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. Would we listen to the truth today? Would we accept that? Would we listen to Jesus Christ when it comes to this very subject? Because he had some very profound words to say about this over in the Gospels. We won't turn there, but very familiar story is told in Luke 12. This guy comes to Jesus and he says, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Christ doesn't say, oh, okay, that's only fair. He rebukes him for that. Who made me a judge over you? And then he uses that as a springboard to give us an illustration about covetousness. And he describes this farmer. You remember the story. Now, you might not be a farmer. It could have been a salesman, could have been a physician, could have been an attorney. It could have been a business owner. It could have been an entrepreneur. It could have been anything. But here's this farmer in this case, and he has this bumper crop, and he begins to talk to himself, and he says, "What should I do?" And then he says, "This will I do." So he gives himself advice. Not always a good idea, according to Jeremiah, the heart's deceitful above all things. So he gets this advice from himself, and he says, "I know what I'll do. I'll go bigger. I'll expand. I'll open more stores. I'll go national. I'll go public. I'll the things people do to take that next step." And so he begins to make all these plans. This is what he's going to do. In Luke 12 and verse 15, Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of things which he possesseth." There are so many who are trying to scratch an itch and get more stuff and meet more emotional needs, really is what they're trying to do. They're trying to feel better about themselves by gaining more. And so they go up higher. This rich farmer does that. And then he says to himself in Luke 12:19, "Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Wrong, wrong, wrong. Because that night, the grim reaper knocked on his door, and you know the story, and that was the end of him. You say, "Well, I don't plan on dying right away." Well, that's not the point of the parable. Christ is trying to teach us here that nothing material will ever benefit the soul. May I say that again? Nothing material will ever benefit the soul, because the soul belongs to God, and only He can satisfy it. We sing that song, "Only Jesus can satisfy your soul." That is so true. If God's not in first place in your life, if God's not the foundation of a life, that life's going to be an empty one. Now, this is not a slam on prosperity. This is a slam on prosperity without God. You see the difference? And that's where many people are at. Salvation is not some vow to poverty. You know, we don't shave our heads and go into a monastery and chant like monks. La, 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 la. And no, where do we get the idea that, okay, I'm saved now, you know, I'm supposed to be poor? No, hard work is something God blesses. But Jesus said in Matthew 6:33, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Notice the priority there. Paul warns in 1 Timothy 6, "They that will be rich, they that will themselves to be rich, that want to be rich, that make it their goal to be rich, shall fall into many hurtful snares and lusts and all that kind of thing." The bottom line is, work hard, prosper, that's fine. But don't forget to let your life revolve around Him. Revolve around Him. Bible says, "Whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do," and that is make money, that would be included, "do all to the glory of God." All to the glory of God. "Do it heartily as unto the Lord, not unto men." Do your personal best. Give. That's why God gives you the wherewithal to make money. If you don't, you're going to put it into a bag full of holes. That's another sermon in Malachi. But give and let God bless you as He sees fit. God blesses a Christian with the right motives. I can't think of a better way to put it. With the right motives. Put God first. Don't get sidetracked by something as silly as green paper. I think of those who've died, got onto eternity without Christ over something as silly as green paper, like this rich farmer. In Luke 12:20, God said unto him, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, and then who shall those things be which thou hast provided?" When the grim reaper knocks on the door, you better be ready. And in verse 21, Jesus says, "So is he that layeth up treasures for himself and is not rich toward God." Now this is straight talk. This is timeless. This is relevant. This would apply to us in the 21st century. All the money in the world will not bring happiness unless you have a right relationship with God, with your Creator, plain and simple. And there are a lot of empty entrepreneurs out there. There are a lot of empty 2- and 3-piece suits walking around out there who have a lot of bucks, but they have no peace. They have no joy. They have no fulfillment in life. They didn't find it in goods. Notice in verses 7 and 8, Solomon says, "Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun." He says, "There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor? Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity. Yea, it is a sore travail. I just want us to get quiet in our thoughts for just a moment here. What Solomon is talking about here is how you get higher, it gets lonelier. And that's really how a pyramid is shaped. I mean, there's not much room at the top for anyone else. We live in a society that has programmed us to educate, so that we can get a degree, so that we can work and work and work, so that we can earn and earn and earn and spend and spend and spend and get more and get more and get more and sell and get to the top and reach the top and think we've arrived and have a better office and have boss on the door, only to realize it wasn't what it was cracked up to be. It really didn't fulfill me at all. Didn't satisfy it. And Solomon says here, will you listen? Will you listen? You know, maybe you're on one of the lower rungs right now, or maybe you're on one of those middle rungs right now. I think it'd be a good point in every life to just stop and say, what do I gain by grabbing that next rung and going one rung higher? What do I really gain by that? I mean, what eternal good is it really going to do? And what is my motive in doing it? I mean, if I'm not satisfied here, am I going to be satisfied here or here? Or here? What will it really take for me to be satisfied? Plain and simple. You know, the book of Ecclesiastes ought to be graduate work for anybody who goes to NDSU or UND. And really, there's something that ought to be written on the bottom of every diploma given out in every college. Beware. Success can be lethal. Because it can. And Solomon warns us about that. In fact, people like this ought to get a yearly postcard that just says, remember, success can be lethal. Money is a tool to get the gospel out, plain and simple. As long as we remember that. But I hope you haven't bought into this line that you need to get more in order to be happy, because the truth will set you free. This is the truth. What we're looking at right now is the truth. And the bottom line is, have you embraced God's priorities? And better yet would be the question, is God on your ladder with you right now? You know, I was on the lower rungs of that ladder in my teen years, scheming and planning, and then I hit 20 and I had my plan. I really did. I met God when I was 20 years of age on that rung. I'm so glad I did. I can't tell you the emotional trauma. I know that it has saved me because I met the Lord on March 5th, 1981 on that rung. And he had other plans for me. You can save yourself so much trouble if you get the priorities straight. You know, over in Egypt, there's a museum, the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. I've been to it. And there you'll find King Tut's golden coffin and the golden mask and all that other golden stuff that they dug up. The boy king. Steve Martin sung about him back in the 70s. It was the boy king. And they did bury him in all this gold. Did you know there is much evidence to show that that was actually Pharaoh's son, the one that you read about in Exodus, that the death angel killed? Very good evidence to show that may be King Tut. But you think of all the gold the boy king was buried in. But I'll bet you his dad would have given every bit of it in order to have his son back. You know, we can get all the gold and really miss relationships and really miss domestic issues and family issues and things that really matter along the way and wring our hands later saying it wasn't worth it. There are so many who are living for stuff, and by the way, so many who don't prepare for eternity while they're living for that stuff. And as somebody said, we're not ready to die until we're ready to live, and even we're not ready to live until we're ready to die. Possessions can be enjoyed, but they can never be worshipped without consequences. May I say that again? Possessions can be enjoyed, but never worshipped without consequences. There will always be consequences. And possessions will never satisfy. They should. I mean, I won't lie to you. As I stand here, you know, as I look at it, there's every reason they should. But they don't. They never have. They never will. Never. You say, I'll prove you wrong, Pastor. You'll waste a lot of time in that process. You experience a lot of emotional trauma in that process. You know, I'm so thankful for the Bible because it just keeps bringing us back to the truth about priorities. And that's what Solomon is talking about here. You know, the problem with people is not their income as much as it is their relationship with their Creator. Most people don't have one. And even many who do have a skewed one. Somebody said, knowing God makes a poor man rich. Well, not knowing God makes a rich man poor. And how true that really is. Is being king of the hill really worth it? It's not. It never will be. You can get to the top and you can be lonely because you didn't bring God with you. There was a fellow shortly after I got saved. I'd gotten my master's license for my electrical trade. And I was witnessing to him. He was a journeyman. And he just kept saying, not now, not now. I got to get my master's. And he had taken it and flunked it and taken it and flunked it and was struggling to pass it. You know, there are a lot of people that have the attitude, God, when I just get what I want, I'll come back and get you. It's like, why don't you take him with you? Bottom line. There are so many people living without the Lord. And it's time for a reality check. It's really time for perspective. Solomon gives it to us. Talks about the futile end of the guy who claws and scratches to get to the top and says you'd be better off with a handful in quietness than both hands full and a household full of travail. Now, he also mentioned the fellow who got it right. And let me just say, if you have been blessed, God bless you for that. But don't forget to give. That's why God blesses us. Don't forget missions as we have our missions month here. Don't forget to give generously. Don't forget also not just money, but don't forget to share your time that you have. Don't forget to share the experiences and the wisdom that you've gained through life with others. Don't forget to give. That's what matters. Be a model of grace. And so in this passage in closing, we see that first of all, we're to relieve oppression instead of causing it. We are also reminded to put first things first, and we are reminded that to be careful. Bottom line, be very careful in the quest for success.
You've been listening to Pastor Tony Skeving of the Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. If you would like a CD of today's message, you can obtain one by sending a gift of $2 to Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. That address again, Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. We hope you'll join Pastor Skeving next time right here on Pulpit Power. Pulpit Power is a production of Heaven 88.7.